And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. Our live shows are right here at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please remember to visit the website, podcastufo.com. Check out the latest blogs and forums. And while you're there, don't forget to like our very active Facebook page.
Hello and Happy New Year, and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. Sam Maranto will be joining us in just a second here. We're coming at you live on the Dark Matter Radio Network, and you can catch us here every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can call in during the live show, or you can Skype us, and I'll talk more about that a little later on. Our guest today for the show is Chase Kletsky. She is a really interesting woman. She's a lot of fun, and she's a real go-getter. She has so many irons in the UFO fire, you can't believe it. You're going to love her. Sam, Happy New Year to you. How are you?
Boy, I'm doing great. I'm enjoying this new year already. We've had some coronal mass ejections in M9 and M6. My God, we're already starting with a bang.
Well, you know, the sun's been so quiet. And a lot of people are saying, you know, we're going to have this ice age and everything because the sun is just kind of going to sleep. So it's starting to wake up a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we had this solar minimum. And every once in a while, it starts back up again. Well, who knows what we're going to have, but we had a series of, boy, there were so many of these fireballs coming in, and now they're actually starting to post them on spacewatch.com, or spaceweather.com, excuse me. Please make it a point to check that out every once in a while and see what's going on. It's a great site. It's a NOAA site, and it's great. I really enjoy it.
It does seem like the fireballs are talked about. I saw one. You and I had talked about it. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. That was many, many years ago. But, yeah, it seems like they're picking up lately. There's a lot of them being talked about down in Mexico and everywhere else.
Sure. Well, last year we had one heck of a fireball come in, didn't we?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. So let's reflect a little bit about what happened in our news stories back in 2013. And by the way, for the listener out there, you can find all the links to these stories in our show notes at podcastufo.com. Let's talk about the huge Chelyabinsk meteor.
You try to pronounce that one.
It's a Chelyabinsk meteor. I think that's how it's pronounced. But yeah. It was a near-Earth asteroid. It entered the atmosphere over Russia. That was back in February of last year. It came in at a speed of 41,000 miles an hour. And I don't know how many times faster than a bullet that is, but it's a lot. And it generated such a huge explosion. You know, all those people were injured. It was like, I believe, 20 or 30 times more energy than the atomic bomb detonated at Hiroshima. And if it wasn't 14 miles up in the atmosphere when that happened, can you imagine the casualties? That would have been something else.
Been devastating. They had 1,400 people injured last count, but it would have been, ridiculous. And did you know that took place in and around the same time that we had a near-Earth object coming in that was a pretty decent-sized one? This was not accountable, supposedly, to that object or a part of that. So, you know, the funny thing is the curiosity about these synchronicities. Did it bump something? Was there something else out of whack out there where this other object comes in? Who knows? But it is mysterious, and it was a blessing that it did blow up 14 miles up.
Well, that's exactly right, though, what you just said. They do think that was a collision, and it was a fractured. It was fractured as it came in, and luckily, because of that, it wasn't as serious as they thought. You know, it could have been if it remained whole and had not had some type of collision ahead of time.
Yep.
Well, I want to move on. I want to say hooray to the Kepler spacecraft for last year. Scientists have now cataloged over 1,000 exoplanets last year in 2013, with over a dozen of them falling in the Goldilocks zone. On June 25th, it announced that the Gliese 667C which is only about 22 light years away from Earth, has three planets in the so-called habitable zone that should allow for liquid water. And it's estimated now there are about 10 billion solar systems out in our galaxy alone that may harbor life. Well, back in May, the Kepler had been placed in a point rest of state because of the failure of a reaction wheel. And it did such a great job. It's going to be used for other things at, you know, from here on out. But cheers to Kepler. That's great.
What I admire is the American technology lives on. These things have lifespans far longer than what they planned them to be. And you know, the funny thing is they're looking for life out there, but life as we know it. Who knows what life could be out there? You look at our planet itself. You look at these vents in the ocean where you have volcanic vents, and nothing should be living in that environment. But, lo and behold, yep, we have life.
Yeah, it pops up wherever it can, really. Now, I want to talk about drones, because drones, like we have talked about in the past, Chinese lanterns are an issue as far as people confusing them with UFOs, and drones, and more drones are going to be coming. And let's see, back in, I think it was, I can't remember what month it was, there was a World Reports article by Jason Keebler that he said, drone use is resulting in increased UFO sightings. And I say to that, no blank, Sherlock. Drones are in the news a lot. And a case in point, a mysterious object spotted over a 2013 Welsh rugby match and tweeted by fans was just a drone hoax. And there were a lot of other reports of mass sightings that were probably weren't drones, such as the July 4th fireworks in Fort Worth, Texas. And Sam, I know you're a big fan of the mass sightings.
Yes, there's been a number of accounts coming in, especially even mass sightings, that are drones or misidentifications. I can recall my first very good drone case that came out of Arizona, and this drone was over the mountaintops, and I'll be doggone, if you didn't really get to look at that and analyze that footage, you would have no clue what it is. But it was a drone. And those Chinese lanterns, well, I get a chill up my spine when I'm thinking about them, because they have caused a lot of havoc. And, you know, the thing is, they're extremely dangerous, and they're illegal in most states and most countries now.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, you have something very flammable going up. And, especially during dry times, it doesn't make any sense to set those off. I was actually at somewhere this last summer where someone set about two or three of them off, and I can see absolutely why someone would confuse them with, you know, a UFO or something extraterrestrial or something without knowing what they were.
Definitely. At a distance, it's, it's confusing. Any points in the sky could make some sort of form. And this is where many people think they're the triangles, and they're not. But when we analyze footage, we can tell, and the more footage you have, especially of independent footage from different perspectives, then we can get a very good idea on locking them in into a time frame, and then you get a three-dimensional aspect from multiple perspectives. So the thing is, all you hoaxers that think you want to pull it off on us, pull the wool over us because you put up some Chinese lanterns, no, that's not going to work. But you can get fined, and potentially if you hurt somebody, you could look at a good fine and possibly go into jail.
Yeah. Well, some people may take that as a challenge, Sam. You never know.
Of course. You never know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sightings, so there were some great ones back in 2013. There were some airlines that had some encounters. There was a really cool triangle one that was caught on a tower cam that made the news in Nebraska. And the newscaster kept trying to make up excuses for it. But then he kept saying, I wonder what that really is. My favorite one was back in last May on the 24th, where a UFO was spotted over a California historic site called the Edgemoor Barn in Santee. There were ghost sightings in the past there, but never a UFO. And check out the great picture on our website, along with all the links to these at podcastufo.com. Now, Sam, you're always working on cases ongoing, aren't you?
Ongoing, yes. We get our share of cases through the CMS site from MUFON. We also get call-ins. I get a number of calls. People email me, send me letters and descriptions and pictures, etc. One of these years, I'm going to have to take some time off, and I do mean years, and assemble all this stuff. Because there's volumes of information that comes in. And you know what I find interesting is some of these older counts that are clearly well beyond the scope of modern technology. Mind you, my first or oldest case I worked on was from 1920. So, you know, the pedigree as far as this being something of that could be explained away by modern technology or drones, I'm sorry, Charlie, it doesn't work in every instance, but it can these days. That's why we really need to go through the material.
That's right. And I want to talk about Voyager 1 because it hits Interstellar back in 2013. After a lot of debate, it was finally confirmed that Voyager 1 hit interstellar space in August of 2012. I know that wasn't 2013, obviously, but it was finally confirmed that it hit it. And now it's in some type of plasma or something like that. Well, it left back in 1977. That's what I like to call the disco era. And it took about 36 years and 12 billion miles at 37,000 miles per hour or 325 million miles per year to get out there. At this rate, it'll reach the closest star in something like 17,000 years. And it'll reach the sixth closest star to us, Sirius, which is only about 296,000 years from now. And I'm going to have a segue into this because I want to talk about Sirius, the movie Sirius. And I'm going to try not to pick on Dr. Stephen Greer too much, but everyone was waiting with a lot of anticipation about the free energy breakthroughs, which prompted him the hiring of his way too sexy for my shirt bodyguards, and of course the Atacama humanoid, or what I referred to in the past as Dr. Greer's alien baby, that DNA tests ended up showing that it was a human. What do you think about that, Sam? Wait a minute. I had another one.
I love the drum roll.
Okay. That's it for sound effects for the show, by the way.
Well, all I could say is I want one for myself.
What, a little Atacama baby?
Yes.
Put it in your pocket, maybe?
Feed it birdseed?
Yeah. That's right. Well, my New Year's resolution from here on out is not to pick on Dr. Stephen Greer, so much, that is. And I did have a few death threats or minor death threats that kind of helped me make that decision. I actually had a lot of angry email the last time I brought this up, and, you know, those things happen. But now it's time for Chase to come on board. But before I stop picking on Dr. Greer, I would like to play for the break song, a karaoke song I did just before the movie Sirius came out last year. And, of course, you'll find this in a YouTube clip in the show notes. But please don't give me too much hate mail about this. Sam, we'll see you here next week. Thank you for joining us.
As always, a pleasure.
And, okay, so stay with us, and we'll be right back with Chase Kletsky.
What a lovely way to say that you were crazy. Grieving his baby. Well, the ET evidence is rather hazy. If we could have seen it when it was growing, see those big, huge, blinking eyes and happy knowing. The Grieving's just crazy. He's a man in love with a little alien to fool you. Grieving's just crazy.
That's right, folks. Just write that check. You can send it in now.
Yeah. Yeah. Chase, Happy New Year. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me tonight, guys. What a way to start a new year.
Oh, it's awesome. Well, Sam's gone. He'll be back next week. It's just you and I. We had a number of emails coming in from people that just preferred the one-on-one interviews. And, you know, it's really easy to walk over each other when you have more than, you know, two people going on here. So it's just you and I.
Aw, well, tell Sam I said hi and sorry I missed him. And hopefully I can catch him soon in our travels. He's awesome.
Yeah. Chase, the last time you were on, I got to tell you, I think I mentioned this to you. I got a whole bunch of email from you. And a whole bunch of email about the show with you that people just loved you. And I'm so glad you're back on. And one of the stories you told was about this encounter that it's actually in the intro of the podcast that I do. And it's about this huge triangle that flew over in front of you and also in front of other witnesses. And you went there to debunk the whole thing. We don't want to get into the story because past listeners have already heard the story in total. But what I would like to ask you, has there been any follow-up since we last talked on that?
Not really. I still scratch my head. I think about it all the time. I think mostly still looking for, through other investigations, things that I can bring in to maybe answer that, because I still walk away thinking there's something off. It's not right. You just don't get all of that in one evening. And there's even a part of me that started looking into maybe a cosmic, supernatural avenue, more the biblical, you know, if you're going to conjure or you're going to, you know, consciously develop something, you know what I mean? Sometimes they show up. I'm not sold on that. Still exploring theory, because that evening still makes no sense.
That's right. I mean, he basically asked you to come down because it was going on, and you saw these lights in the sky, and then you said, and then he said to you, here it comes again. And, yeah. You know, it is really amazing because there were so many of these things, and then the being in the middle of the field. I almost want to tell the whole story, but
we'll
just have to listen to our last podcast.
Yeah, and I actually have another investigation that, you know, some strange things have happened as well that, you know, just really bizarre. And I guess that saying's true. You can't look into the abyss without it noticing you at some point.
Yes. Chase, I want to say to you, I am going to take some phone calls here and also some Skypes that may come in while we're talking. And for the listener out there, the phone number is 603-967-4030. I'll say that again, 603-967-4030. And the Skype name, it's actually my first name and last name together, Marty Willis. No spaces, no anything, just plain Marty Willis. And either way, if you Skype or call out there as a listener, you're going to be taken in live. And so please don't say anything until I introduce you. It's a little clunky. We're trying to work that out. But if you want to call in or Skype in, just be patient, and I will. And then I have to tell you, Chase, I'm sorry this is all on air, but I will type you a text message that we have a call coming in, and we'll just see if we can do it. So if anyone wants to call, feel free to. Chase, you were telling me earlier through email, you have a lot of things going on. So why don't you start at, I know you're making some trips. You had something going on with our past guest, Richard Dolan. And just tell us what's going on.
Well, I do have a trip coming up I'm very, very excited about. Leave very shortly, in just a couple of days, for Peru and Bolivia on a huge investigation that's really going to take us to several parts of that, you know, South America. Bolivia, of course, you can't go there and not hit some of the megalithic structures that we see on Ancient Aliens and all these TV shows, which do come into play with the investigation a little bit. And, of course, Peru has such an amazing ancient past when it comes to everything from elongated skulls, reported giants. It's just so rich. Mm-hmm. And as a ufologist, I felt like I just cannot go further unless I investigate Peru.
So is there anything that in particular, any type of event that is drawing you there, or just the general aspect of it?
It is, and unfortunately, I'm not the lead on it, so I'm going as an investigator and part of the team, so I'm not at liberty to say, but it does come out in a big way. It will be later on in the year, and exactly what we're doing. It's kind of an ongoing thing that's been before. There is production involved, so you know how that goes. You know, a lot mm-hmm. of confidentiality statements are signed, and, you know, so out of respect, but it's very interesting because this year I am devoting all my UFO investigations to a particular kind of subtopic in ufology, which is the cosmic theory of the UFO phenomena is going to be the deception of biblical prophecy.
Can you elaborate more on that?
Sure. It's, you know, the UFO phenomena and, you know, the ancient alien theories that are coming out and have gained so much popularity, there's a huge sector that also gives us as much evidence backing their theory that this is cosmic. These are the fallen angels. These are, you know, eternal beings that we, and I guess in our modernity, kind of look at them as spiritual, more ghosty, without realizing that they are flesh and blood. They are, so to speak, they're different than humans. But these are, you know, beings and entities. They have a cosmic view. They're eternal. They're thousands of years ahead of us and also have access to technologies. And so is this really the flesh and blood aliens from Pleiades or Sirius or, you know, wherever, another planet? Or is this truly what, you know, some of the ancients were describing, more true to things? It's kind of like the ancient aliens where they talk about, you know, are they really talking about, you know, myths and legends, or were these really flesh and blood extraterrestrials? Well, the other question is, could they be the angels, the fallen angels, some of the other entities we're told about in prophecy? It's a little new to me, but I'm diving in, completely devoting a whole year. I feel like as a ufologist, the nuts and bolts kind of drying up a little. We can only do so much with lights in the sky. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of run its course almost, because in almost 50 years of chasing them and, you know, reporting things like the triangle in 2010 or, you know, the hundreds of other strange things we've seen, I think 2013 really taught me that we have to up our game. Our theories have to be better documented. We have to present them almost in a way that's more admissible to meet that scientific and even the public's expectation for a better understanding. And in a lot of ways, two things did that for us: the ancient alien television show and the citizens hearing that was held in D.C.
Right. Wow. This is fascinating. You know, the thing I was thinking of is when you had that sighting of the triangle and you came back through that cornfield, and that being was standing there that you all saw, I would think that that would totally change your thoughts and your life. And maybe would it be fair to say that this is part of the reason that you're getting involved in this type of exploration?
Absolutely. Because I still, you know, for the listeners that don't know, this being for me came out of nowhere. Nobody saw it coming, completely unaware there was anything at all in that field with us. And it was completely dark, completely a kind of a strange dark, even being way out in rural Tennessee, no streetlights, no big cities, in this cornfield, horribly dark. And to have this big halogen flashlight, to go from completely dark to within 6 feet, a flashlight put right in your face and not a twinge. It was just like a statue. Nothing moved. And like I said, I've been very, very honest in saying it was really just a second that we stood there and saw this. But in that second, it's so burned into your mind. And I've had so many questions ever since. And just kind of wondering why a being could just be there without any indication. And, you know, we're in the middle of like this huge, huge 100-acre cornfield. Surely we would have seen something, because everybody, there were seven people in the field. Everyone's kind of walking around. You know, it's still a question, Martin.
Yeah, hang on just a minute. We have a Skype call coming in. Skype caller, you're on the air. How are you?
Good. It's Bobby, buddy, North Carolina.
And who's this now? Hey, Bobby.
Bash.
Bobby that we met down in North Carolina. How you doing?
Sure. Good, man. Great show.
Great.
I got a couple questions for you.
All right. Go ahead. Fire away.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask her. She's actually talking about the triangle, that episode with the entity in the field. One of the questions I had is, when that really big fear hit everybody, is that did it seem like it was some kind of effect that they did over them, or a field or something like that, the way that it affected everybody? I do want to tell her that if she does go to Bolivia, to please, for God's sakes, go to Pumapunku. It's awesome.
It's on my list.
Oh, it was awesome. I'd love to go. I'm not going to be able to go, but I'd love to go. If you go, please go. Enjoy it. It's awesome. And the other question is, an admissible book that you had with Dolan?
Yeah.
Yes.
She's going to be talking about that, probably.
Okay. But you pretty much hit on the stuff. I would like to hear more also about her new case that she had recently, where something else is going on. You talked about it right in the very beginning.
First, thanks for calling, Bobby. It's awesome to meet you. And the case that we are kind of still looking into, but just the strange stuff that happened was in North Carolina, so you're probably going to enjoy that one too. To get back to the first question, yes, absolutely. Everybody in that field knew that fear was absolutely put upon us.
It was like induced. It was definitely induced.
And it felt hive-minded. Everybody turned the same direction and ran at the same time. Nobody said a word. Nobody said, what's that? Or, you know, anything that would alert someone to behave that way. And
so it's like something that they could use, if whoever they is or what they are, to pretty much control everybody so nothing irrational happens.
I kind of feel like we weren't supposed to be there. We were kind of in their way of whatever they needed to do there. And the only way they could get rid of us was to make us feel that way, because the main witness, when we first got there, Bobby, we get out of the truck, and of course, I just met this guy. I'm, you know, driving up. I'm 5'1", 100 pounds. You know, we drive up to the backwoods of Tennessee, and he gets out of a truck with a big old shotgun, and I'm sure the look on my face was telling. And he looked at me, he said, no, Chase, I'm not a serial killer or anything. He says, I bring the gun because they have a problem with coyotes. And
actually, I'm really familiar with the whole story. I've actually listened to it several times on different shows, and it's absolutely amazing. And like you said, there's so much that happened that night that it seems to me it's like synchronicities happen after you start looking into this kind of stuff, and it's just odd.
Yes, I agree.
And that was my question. Do you feel that you have like these, since 1996, 94, you have more and more like synchronicities happen that just seem odd?
I do, and I've often said that, or even report that come to me as an investigator. A lot of people that experience any kind of contact or UFO activity are often plagued with paranormal type activity after. And it's not
always. Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, ghost or it seems like this synchronicity. Things change for you in a very conscious and a very strange way. And that has absolutely happened for sure.
Well, thanks for your questions.
Oh, absolutely. I don't mean to cut you off the path that you're taking, Chase. I think it's an excellent path. And I've been trying to talk to Martin about this along the lines of I'm very tired of the nuts and bolts, because it really doesn't explain of who they are, what they are, and why they're here. I mean, we can come up with ideas on how the technology works, but that's just a technology. It's like Christopher Columbus's ships, you know?
Yeah, you nailed it, Bobby. You know, seriously, nailed it, brother, because we know as investigators and people that are in the field, like, I don't really know what's going on in pediatric medicine. I'm sure I would be shocked and amazed if I started diving in at the technologies, you know, and the things that they're actually doing that I had no idea they were capable of. And I feel it's the same way. As ufologists, we know UFOs are real. They're burgeoning, and they're not going away. That's kind of what L.A. Marzulli says all the time. So I've kind of taken his little saying. But, you know, that this is something we know. They are real. They are not slowing down. They are entering our atmosphere. And what we need to do now is, what do they want, and who are they? Yep. What's the reality behind this visitation? And I think that's why a lot of us that have been in the field for so many years are abandoning that nuts and bolts, lights in the sky. And, you know, and you guys talking earlier in the show with Sam and Martin about the drones. Drones are freaking killing us with these sightings. You know, right. It's and the technologies of even the underwater drones, I'm constantly putting those up. There's a girl in Arkansas named Cindy Dove who's doing amazing work. That's all she does, drone research. And she's posting this stuff, and it's shocking what's out there. So it's awesome. Thank you for calling, Bobby.
Thank you, and good job. And thank you, Martin, and Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, Bobby. Thanks for calling. So, Chase, going along with what you were speaking about, Richard Dolan and you are doing something. Let's talk quickly about that.
Yes, I love that guy. We've been good friends for quite a while, but he's just really amazing. And because I'm really close to him, I almost feel guilty for saying this, but this guy is so essential in our field. He is so amazing. And he's got a new book coming out, too. It's kind of the third edition to UFOs and National Security State. I promise you guys, I've seen it. It is his best work ever.
He spent a long time writing that book, too, because I had heard him talk about that book about a year ago, and he thought it was going to come out. And then he keeps going over the edit and having other people, you know, read through it. So he's really putting his heart and soul into it.
He really is, and so many things have changed. And the thing about Richard is, you know, he's an Oxford grad. He is a historian. So anything that he puts out there has got to be so accurate. It's just so important to him. So that's kind of push things aside. And a couple significant things have come up in the past year that it could not be ignored, especially in what he's going to be talking about. Just amazing work, you guys. Oh, my gosh. And I'm very fortunate to call him friend. He's the nicest guy. Everyone can call him friend, Martin. You do. You know, everyone does. He's such a great guy. Very approachable. Mm-hmm. But we had this idea. Actually, it was Race Hobbs. Many years ago, we started talking about investigation manuals, you know, just something that we could put together, and not just like UFOs, like the MUFON manual, or, you know, where the MUFON manual is great if you're a MUFON member. You know, it teaches you CMS and, you know, but what do we do for the independents out there or the people that just want to investigate anything that people need help with? They don't know what's going on. They just need somebody to come and help them. You can't dial 911. So we did. We wrote this manual. And the further I kind of got with this, looking for a publisher, Richard actually had some really great contributions. So in writing this, you know, the book is authored by Chase Kletsky with Richard Dolan. He wasn't just my publisher anymore. The guy has put such a great job and so many elements in this book that put it together. He organized the data. Martin, I am not an author. I don't want to be. Oh, my gosh. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. It's brutal, especially for somebody with standards as high as Dolan. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness, but it about killed me. I'm not even gonna lie. But it's done, and he has done such a brilliant job. I'm a data collector. I'm an investigator, boots on the ground. I'm a door kicker. Mm-hmm. He's the brain behind the brawn is kind of how I joke about this. I gave him all the data. Okay, this is kind of where I want to go with this. And it's not a book that's going to detail, hey, if you're going to investigate a ghost, do this, 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 and this. We're not preaching here. What we felt was probably most needed in all three fields, be it cryptids, paranormal, and UFOs, was a standard that the public would understand and the scientific community. And that is, they know what burden of proof is. They know what evidence would be sufficient. And I think some of our investigators don't even know about what is evidence? How do you acquire a strength of evidence? And how do you present it in a way that the public understands it? So the book really tells everyone we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We have proper standards that the science community accepts and the public. Let's try it this way for a while. And honestly, our hope and desire is that one day, if it's an investigator that breaks things wide open, that somehow they were inspired from something we did. You know, it's just, yeah. But the book is called Admissible, and it's going to be out in, you know, just hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, wow. And it will be available on Amazon. And I'm kind of waiting with all the holidays for Amazon to, come on, post it, we're excited.
Well, I'm glad you didn't name it UFOs for Dummies or something like that. Oh, that's probably out there. I've never looked.
I haven't either, although we really spent a lot of time trying to find an investigation manual that, you know, we felt you could recommend to somebody. And there's a lot out there. And to tell you the truth, Martin, 100 people could have written this. They just weren't. Mm-hmm. You know, we needed, you know, it's not that I'm the greatest investigator ever on the planet. It had nothing to do with that. It was, let's get together and put our heads together and give the community something kind of to hold on to, maybe. So
that's great.
We're very proud of it. Really, really proud of it. And of course, being Dolan, it doesn't look like anything the public's seen when it comes to a UFO or a paranormal manual. Completely different look. There's illustrations in there that they're just very witty, almost a little funny. We do poke fun at a few things. When we're talking about who do you partner with, how do you develop a team, and we talk about maybe don't want the excitable people to be like, oh my God, that's a mothership alien, or it's just fun.
That's right. Well, you know, it's I wonder sometimes about how many actually reportings there are per sightings. You know, that's something I know because firsthand myself, because when I had my sighting, I had absolutely no idea where to go with it. You know, even though the internet was around, it was back in 2006, I didn't even think to look online at the time, you know, or think about where to go with, or I don't think that anyone knows out there that is not involved in this exactly what to do right off the bat. Now, this book is more or less for investigators, though. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. It's an investigation manual, for sure. There's really nothing in it, you know, as far as historical. You know, we reference some cases and, you know, just kind of common sense thing that, you know, we just don't think about. I've been doing this for so long. There are some big mistakes I've made in the past or things I wish I had done differently. Or, you know, if we could help one person not do that, that would be awesome. You know, it would be so nice to help somebody, you know, along with that kind of training I never had.
Can you give an example or two?
Sure. We talk about a little bit about, even like a NBC situation, you know, some groups or whatever want to teach, you know, this is how you put on hazmat and breathing apparatus when you're going to, you know, these anomalous investigations. You have a crashed UFO and, you know, you have some readings on your Geiger counter. This is how you protect yourself. And, of course, our hands come up saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's think about this for a minute. One, how are you going to decontaminate yourself? Number two, it's illegal to be in possession. So if you do take anything, you know, radiation, anything that would be considered NBC, nuclear, biological, or chemical, is against so many Homeland Security laws, mm-hmm. you're not going to end up in a little police department, probably in a basement at Gitmo somewhere. Yeah. You know, and why risk life and limb for a piece of UFO evidence that most likely is going to be debunked, you discredited, you know, and risk your family, contamination, cross-contamination. You can't mail it anywhere. No lab's going to take it anyway. They can't take that kind of substance from anyone. So, but on the surface, we do know that groups do train with these hazmat apparatus. And we're kind of letting people know, not a good idea. Like, that common sense, know the laws, you know, what kind of investigator do you want to be? The book is very professional-minded. Mm-hmm. And it's about case management, because in the end, instead of just talking about our cases like the one in Tennessee, we just talk about it. We really want to start the agenda of proper case management, that at the end of every single paranormal investigation, cryptid, UFO, you have a case file that could be admissible in a court of law. It was done by the book, and that's what this book teaches you to do.
Wow. Wow, that's a gift. That's a gift. There are so many people out there that, you know, I mean, it just takes more steps closer to actually having something actually happen.
Yeah, and it's like Bobby said, you know, we're still talking about things. With all the evidence out there, why are people still floundering on the internet? You know what I mean? We need better ways of presenting even our cases. And I referenced the citizens' hearing. What I loved about that was being there was whether they're elected officials right now or former, it doesn't matter. In fact, the former colleagues, senators and congressmen and women, actually have more power than the let's rock and roll Congress we're dealing with now, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact that they weren't elected officials meant nothing to us, because it's like Congresswoman Kilpatrick said, honestly, if anybody in this room thinks that our signatures combined to the president of the United States would not be read personally by him, do not understand how D.C. works. She was right. Absolutely right. What I thought was brilliant was how they brought in so many of a certain type of witness and how it was presented. Proper testimony after proper testimony. Before the testimony was given by each witness, they handed that counsel all the documentation, just like evidence. They handed them paperwork. Nothing was said that wasn't backed up with this whole file on what they've just said, so that you could go back and reference, you could go back and look, the public scrutiny. Why could Robert Salas talk about in Minot, you know, the nukes going down? Because mm-hmm. he backed that up with testimony and documentation. And the way it was handled was, it just raised the bar. It raised the bar. We can never go back from that moment. We just can't. And it really inspired me to get that publisher and let's get this book done. And, of course, you know, Richard Dolan. And honestly, Martin, it was really something to be there to watch your friends and people you've interviewed on the radio and, you know, the people you admired, you know, that really these brave people that have forged that pathway before us suffered That's ridicule right. and humiliation and, you know, even harassment, raise their right hand and take it with the intentions it was meant to be. I get goosebumps talking about it now. It was such a great event, and it raised the bar. It changed me, honestly.
Wow. Wow, that's great. You know, I always think this, though. I think that was all well and good, and I think it was it needed to happen. I was glad that did happen. But the bottom line is I don't think that disclosure is going to come from the government. That's my own personal view. I think it's going to come elsewhere if it ever does. And it's okay if you don't agree with me, just what's your opinion on that?
Unfortunately, I absolutely agree with you. The government has absolutely nothing to gain from it. Can you imagine the egg on their face, let alone the humiliation of looking people in the eye that they've destroyed their lives or the lies that they have told consistently? And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure the people that could tell us even know anything about it. I believe it's so compartmentalized, it's so buried down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we talk about the military cover-up, and there is one, it's not our guys we watch going through the gates every day on these military bases. It's just not. I can tell you that as a military wife and mom of these kids, no one's ever talked to anybody I know about the UFO phenomena and the military cover-up. They just mm-hmm. don't know. They're worried about their job. And I just think it's so deep and so buried in the background and truthfully has been privatized by this point that it's almost ridiculous. The disclosure is not going to come from our government. It's going to be an event that they cannot explain away.
Yeah, I believe that too. If you want to call into the show, it's 603-967-4030. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Maybe there will be some type of huge mass sighting that is just undeniable. But, you know, another thing I think about, if there are these small parts of the government that are covering up things, like let's go all the way back to Roswell. Well, that's a generational thing at this point. So what happens when it rolls down to the next generation of people coming in? Is it just tucked away, and who knows about it, who passes it to the next person, that type of thing, you know?
I'm not sure it is passed as far as, you know, the people that were involved, you know, in Roswell, New Mexico, like the Jesse Marcells and intelligence officer, for goodness sakes. You know, I don't think it's passed down from them. I think once it's handled, it stays within that need to know. If it's passed down, it's going to be passed down to the next secret keepers.
Mm-hmm. This is something I was thinking about today because I was watching some astronomy films on YouTube, and they were talking about the Fermi theory and all that. And I started thinking about how, you know, people are in such denial. They'll talk about everything like signals. We're not getting any signals from anyone out there. If they're out there, then why aren't they telling us? And then there's this whole side that you and I know, and a lot of the listeners know, that people are seeing things that have a possibility of coming from some other place. And it's just so shunned by, you know, mainstream science or astronomers. But I do want to add one thing. We have a listener that is an astronomer in the UK. And by golly, he had a big triangle fly right over his telescope when he was out in the field. So it does happen.
Right. I kind of think, Martin, when you think of institutions, when you think of kind of how we're watching the Vatican, real time, right now, today, putting itself ahead of the extraterrestrial issue or the phenomena. In other words, they acknowledge not only the possibility, but, you know, the largest, most technology proficient telescope in the world.
In Arizona.
It's owned by the VAT. Mm-hmm. Yes. In Arizona, Mount Graham. It's like in our backyard. And they're so putting themselves ahead of this. And as much as our universities and the MITs, you would think that they're kind of scoffing and laughing at ufologists, and they are still a little bit, the ridicule factor is still very palpable, and yet they're doing the most amazing work on discovering life on other planets. And then you look at our governments who are also got their hand in that cookie jar, and, you know, but institutions control our knowledge, whether it's religious, educational, government. They control what the populace gets to know. We know that through the Smithsonian. Did Columbus really discover America? Most of us in this field are like, yeah, no. So
Vikings were here long before them.
Exactly. And but it's, you know, there's just such this this big lie that we live so much that, you know, I think it's important all of us keep speaking out. The internet changed a lot. I think there's a lot more information. But it kind of goes back to what I was saying. I'm not so sure the public has access because it's not an issue in their daily lives yet. You know, if UFOs real, when they say, well, people really aren't seeing UFOs today because they don't know, is because they're not really researching it. Like you said, mm-hmm. you know, we and the listeners know because we're involved in it and are paying attention. But it's kind of like me. I have no idea what's going on in pediatric medicine or cancer research. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I'd be shocked if I started looking into those issues. And I wouldn't until it affects my personal life.
Right. I heard someone being interviewed the other day. I can't remember where I heard it, but the woman said, well, I don't believe in UFOs at all. And then I saw this thing. And it really does sometimes take a personalization of an issue before people will pay attention. It's kind of like when you buy a yellow Mazda or something like that. All of a sudden, you're seeing them all over the road. You never saw them before.
That's a good analogy. That is perfect. And I agree. That's exactly what it is. And the people that don't believe in UFOs, it's like the religious community that, you know, the evangelics are kind of the holdouts. They're not going to discuss extraterrestrials. Catholics control. There's about 1/6 of the world's population is Catholic. And they're openly talking about extraterrestrials and, you know, the possibilities. And there was even a statement by one of the Jesuits that said that he didn't believe that all the extraterrestrials would know Jesus Christ because not all of them have original sin. Oh my gosh, Martin, wow. What the heck was that statement? I'm falling off my chair like, wait, whoa, don't stop, wait.
Can you imagine if that was said?
What did you just say?
Can you imagine if that was said even 50 years ago?
Absolutely. And not to mention the burned alive for even mm-hmm. thinking half this stuff.
Right. Wow. So, Chase, we have a choice here. We can keep rolling along here for another 15, 20 minutes if you'd like, or we can wrap it up as an hour show. And you know what? I'm putting it all on you.
I am having a blast. I mean, you know, it's up to you. I'd love to stay. I can't believe how fast it goes. But I always have a good time with you, Martin.
Yeah.
Hey, where's Sam? That's Sam.
Yeah. Well, Sam's a great guy. And
yes.
He says that he wants to talk to you. So you guys hook you two up together. And he's always out there investigating. He's really active. And I'm really glad that he was willing to come aboard and be part of the show.
Yeah, I was really happy. I hear so many good things about you guys both out here in the field. But yes, Sam definitely, especially lately, he must be rocking some good stuff lately.
Yeah, he's still, you know, the lead investigator on the Tinley Park incident, and there's constantly new evidence that comes forward on that, or more people talking about that. And it's kind of funny, isn't it, how these sightings, mass sightings, can happen so long ago. And, you know, a good case in point, it wasn't really, yeah, I guess you'd call it a mass sighting. It was the guest I had last week, Shane Ryan, down in Australia, of the Westall UFO incident. And after they ran the documentary of that sighting, all these people came forward, you know. So I
yes.
think it kind of trickles forward. People start to feel a little more comfortable about talking about it. And, you know, an old case doesn't necessarily have to be put to bed because, you know, people do come forward.
Absolutely not. We found that in the Chris Bledsoe case, which was kind of made, unfortunately, popular on that MUFON TV show, UFOs Over Earth. And since then, I mean, right after that episode aired, I mean, people were coming out of the woodwork. It's just amazing how many people have real information, things that didn't come out on the TV show that kind of match what Chris has said, you know, things that weren't made public. You know, so it isn't just what they're seeing on TV, but, yeah, the amount of information. I love cold cases. I'm with Sam. I love the cold cases. You come after them with, you know, fresh eyes, a new team, new technologies that we're using in the field. Oh, I love cold cases.
Yeah. Now, what was your involvement with Chris was on the show last summer. What's your involvement with his case?
I reopened his case because really nothing's ever been done. It's not even documented in any way, shape, or form. There's no information. Even the things from the television show, like a lie detector test, we can't. There's nothing. There's not a single piece of documentation, a note, anything.
Wow.
I know. It's incredible, actually. And, of course, the people responsible for that are no longer with MUFON and haven't been for many years. But, you know, seriously, it doesn't do this man and what he's gone through any favors. And so we opened up the case because it also continues to happen. Nobody has investigated the witnesses that have come forward since. And as a matter of fact, Martin, I get a call from a really great UFO investigator in New York. He's very popular up there. His name is Vinny Sergio. I'm probably saying that wrong. He's going to kill me. I'm Italian, too. Like, what the heck? But Vincent called, and he had heard from a Facebook friend in North Carolina that they had a very strange event. They're paranormal investigators that happened to be walking through the property to the slaves' quarters that they've been to 100 times. They ended up walking through the woods, and something happened. They felt like they're missing time, and the witnesses actually saw something that first they thought was paranormal, like a ghost, but what was described as a 7-foot-tall, very thin being with a head kind of like a balloon, like, you know, one of those balloons where it's real thin at the bottom and bulbous up top, and it was white. And it scared them so much. These are two police officers that are also in the National Guard. They fired upon it. They pulled their weapons out. Yes, they were that terrified. It was that real to them. And, you know, so Vinny called me, knowing I live a little closer, and asked if I wanted to talk to them, and so I did. So Vinny and I kept in touch, but I actually went up there. One of the first things I did before calling or before making any arrangements was I am very close to Chris Bledsoe, and I had called him because I was going to tell him about, you know, I got this case, and isn't this so great? And what I knew was it was in St. Paul. And when Chris picked up the phone, he says, "Oh, my gosh, Chase, I was just going to call you. You're not going to believe it. Last night, I'm in my backyard." And he said, "You know, I see this just really strange light just kind of dropping." He said, "But it wasn't usually where I see them." He goes, "It was quite off in the distance." So I listened to him, and we talked about it a little bit. And then I said, "Well, let me tell you why I called you." I said, "Chris, where is St. Paul?" And he got real quiet. He laughed. He goes, "Chase." He goes, "Actually, it's right behind my house." Oh. As a matter of fact, it's the same place that if that light was landing anywhere, that's where it would have landed. So I was quite shocked. Uh-huh. I was quite
small
shocked.
Small world, huh?
Yes, jeez. Very small.
That
very
sounds
small.
Almost like the Braxton Woods, or I believe that's what it was called, monster. You know, real tall being, very strange.
Yes.
You ever heard that case?
Yes, I have. And I thought about that. I did end up going up the next weekend, and maybe it was two weekends after I took the initial report with Vinny. And we literally, this is a good team. This is a solid investigation team, but they needed somebody that was familiar with UFOs because they didn't even believe in UFOs or wanted anything to do with it. And they believed that what they saw had more to do with that. So really, I was up there just to kind of help them with the whole UFO. Is it more UFO related or not? I did invite Chris to go with me because it was right in back of his house. And he had mentioned that's where he was raised.
Ah, wow. Now, so when they shot at it, what was the reaction?
It just disappeared.
Ah. Wow.
And it wasn't the only time they saw it. They had seen this twice now. And they were getting a little freaked out, which is not like them, because these are people who have been on this property for a couple of years. They investigate it all the time. And they actually stay there. So, you know, I get up there. They also talked about a time, you know, that time warping. They just couldn't understand how it was so much later, and they called it a time warp. Of course, you and I would recognize it as missing time.
Mm, right.
So I go up there. Chris Bledsoe, I invite him to see if he'd like to go with me because he's very familiar with the area. He grew up in St. Paul. And also, my husband was with me. We have 4, 5 members of this team, all adults, very good to go, know this like the back of their hand. There's a big soy field, bean, like soybean field. Mm-hmm. And then there's like this little patch of woods. This is not a big section, Martin. It's like just a couple hundred yards of woods. And then it opens up into these power lines. So in the afternoon, I went and got all the base readings, went to the power lines, you know, that high EMF, all that stuff. We're laying out our perimeters, all those readings, got the witness statements on video. I'm laying this whole case out, and we go in that night. That night, we're walking through this tiny little section of woods. I can't, to this day, my husband's in front of me, you know, my husband's not at all involved in the UFO investigations at all. He just happened to be there and wanted to tag along. And because I wasn't supposed to be on an investigation, I was just there to kind of help them through a UFO phenomena or the UFO aspects. You know, he's a submariner, and he's got a little compass on his watch, and we're going through the woods, and we need to keep a northwest trek. We're all in line. We're all following each other. We come across this big ditch. We drop down the ditch. We come out of the ditch, and we keep walking. Well, we should have been there in like 10, 15 minutes. We should have been out of this little area. And I kept saying, are you sure we're going the right direction? My husband's kind of laughing at me because we're going northwest. He's got his compass. You know, the guy in front, these guys have been here for years. They know the direction. And Martin, all of a sudden, we come up to the ditch again. And I'm like, everybody kind of stopped. It was so shocking. We're like, how did we get to the ditch? And of course, we're asking, how many ditches are there? You know, all these questions. And after maybe 2-3 minutes, we just kind of thought, okay, or whatever. So everybody kind of went through the ditch again. We crawled out, going again through the woods. And then all of a sudden, I see an opening. I'm like, freaking thank goodness. It seemed like forever trying to get out of this little tiny patch of woods. And we ended up exactly where we started. We're not on the other side of the woods. We're right back where we started. Well, everybody at this point, a little freaked out. Chris Bledsoe's with us. You know, my husband, we're all literally all dumbfounded.
Wow.
Like, how did this happen when you're going northwest with a compass and we're not off? Well, later on in the evening, or later on after we reviewed the evidence, it was reported to us that the video shows us not only going through that ditch one time, because we had helmet cams. I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that. We only went over that ditch one time, and we were only in that woods 15 minutes, according to the video. And Martin, all of us know that is not true. There is no way. We were in there at least an hour to an hour and a half. Mm. And a couple other strange things happened, but needless to say,
your time warp.
Yeah. I, you know, and it was such a strange feeling. And, you know, again, what can we explain? I don't, it was just one of those weird things, but, you know, you can't investigate these things and be the boots on the ground and not experience that paranormal or these strange events every once in a while. But we're still not believing. Like, we all know we hit that ditch twice. And it wasn't like, you know, we were looping. We did not make a circle. It's almost like we hit one point and all of a sudden just woke up back at the beginning is the best way to describe it, because to us, we crossed it twice. It's just crazy. And to end up in the exact same spot we started, following a compass. Just
is that
weird.
What made you put your, why did the chicken cross the joke on the other day?
It did. It did.
You want to explain that one?
Yeah, and then you saw a post about that experience. That was one of the investigators, and you know, we're still trying to figure out what's going on. Everything's being documented and done in that professional manner. But then to make it even stranger, Martin, Chris calls and something, just knowing he was raised, kind of born and raised in St. Paul, he looks at the records and he talks to his mother. He finds out that that house that the property sits on was owned by the Bledsoe family at one time.
Wow.
I was just like, come on, come on.
Yeah, there's other cases you hear about that. Like, things just seem to follow.
Mm-hmm.
It really is amazing. I want to give out the number one more time, 603-967-4030. We'd love to hear from you. Or Skype name, Marty Willis, all one word. I want to talk about what you're going to be doing down in Peru in just a second. But before I move on to that, I wanted to jump back to us talking about, trace evidence, physical evidence. And I want to ask you what you've been involved in over the years. But before that, I spoke with Ray Stanford. We stay in touch. And he wrote, he was the first investigator there, even before Hynek, I believe, or just after Hynek, with the Socorro incident way back when. And he held in his hands, he quietly dug out a rock that had metal scrapings on it from one of the feet that came down on that craft, that egg-shaped craft that landed. And he brought that to get analyzed. And he had the Holy Grail right there because it was something really unusual. It was a type of metal that came from an unworldly craft of some kind. And he had all the evidence there, brought it to a NASA agency, and they claimed that they were only going to scrape part of it off. He was very concerned about that. When he got it back, it was completely clean. And the person doing the investigation was off somewhere else, and he could not contact him. It's like so close to actually having some type of amazing evidence.
And again, it's one of the things we talk about in the book is that chain of custody. You relinquish this, and they take professional responsibility, which now makes them responsible for that evidence in a court of law. It wouldn't have helped in further discovery or independent analysis, but at least he would have been able to prove that something wrong happened to his evidence. And it's I kind of think of it with the Melba Ketchum, who believed that she had the Bigfoot DNA.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And the woman was raped out here, and I felt so bad for her because she believed, and a lot of people back her on this, she had it. Mm-hmm. But her case management and the sloppy record keeping absolutely destroyed her whole case. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
We need to get better at this, because even a paranormal investigator going out, you never know when you're going to be that team that catches that piece of evidence. And if we're not documenting this properly, then it's just another story on a blog, or a website.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get better. And that piece of evidence, we hear about that all the time. There's only one answer for that, theft. And
right.
It's why I don't ask UFO analysts to analyze any of our photos or our videos. And a lot of that has to do with, although they do really great work, they're vested somehow. One way or another, they have an interest. I'm calling MIT. I'm calling Kodak. By the way, these guys who make the cameras and know what they're capable of love to help you analyze photos and to determine what's in that photo. And they're really great about it. But, they have no preference one way or another how this turns out. They have no interest. And that's what we need to start doing.
Sure.
I never use UFO people to validate any of our evidence. And that's why we're getting credible things happening out here. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of also, when you're talking about contamination, it's kind of like DNA testing in a crime scene.
Yes.
I mean, anything can contaminate it. Any small, small mishap or misuse of anything can contaminate it and make it non-admissible.
Yes, and we talk about that in the book and actually detail exactly how you document all of this so that it's admissible, like UFO evidence, all of that. It's hopefully going to raise the bar in that it protects our investigators and it protects the witnesses. And, you know, we even talk about confidentiality and what the responsibility, right to privacy issues. It's a crazy world out there, and we have to be careful with our evidence. And I'm a big believer in networking, Martin. I believe in working together. We're all in this together. I work a lot with MUFON. People know that I did leave my position in MUFON. It's 95% of the people are the most amazing, sincere investigators. A few of them, yeah, they need to go. But most of them are awesome, and I still work with them. We have to come together, and, you know, some of these egos, man, boot them out. You know, when they think they're bigger than this phenomena, see ya. You're not working with us. I can't deal with it. It's, you know, it's about the witnesses and their stories, and they own them. It's their experiences, and, you know, this is the big change. You know, there's a way that we could bring this up and take it forward and really give a lot of credit and honor those who lost so much before us. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of the J. Allen Hynek's and the Jacques Vallée's, whom, by the way, we hear about so often, and yet no one's talking about them both believing at the end that this is most likely supernatural, definitely interdimensional, and most likely cosmic, meaning heaven and earth. This is a cosmic dilemma of heavenly beings. What? I'm paying attention. These guys that spent 30 years in the field are, how about David Jacobs?
Right.
You know, 30 years in the abduction phenomena, and he's coming out saying, you guys, it's not good news. It's not good news. Be afraid. It's a hybridization program, and when they're done, they don't need us. You know, and a lot of people don't like what they're saying, but these guys have put decades in. I'm going to pay attention. I don't want to start it at A when they've done great work to M. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, laid the bricks ahead. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the evidence that you have been involved with.
Okay.
What are some of the cases where there was actually some type of, is it trace landing evidence or something like that?
Yeah, mostly like the Chris Bledsoe case. He has a tree, believe it or not, in his yard that spontaneously combusts. That's probably not the most recent, but the most recent one I can talk about at this moment. And, you know, we went up and we took, you know, samples of the tree, the sand around it, mostly to rule out accelerants, anything that could have sparked this as a hoax to the family, because no one believes that they've done this, you know, on purpose. And so a lot of physical evidence is taken, usually environmental. We're taking readings. We don't just use 1 meter. You have to back it up. And that's how we acquire strength of evidence. You just don't have one person running all of the equipment. You've got to have multiple talents, which is why high-performance teams are very necessary. I say high-performance because I like working with people that are so focused on getting in there and taking care of the investigation. They're not worried about the other stuff. We don't care if this ever makes a TV show or, you know, a radio show or anything. We just care about doing the best investigation for that witness. And
Chase, but it's most... I want you working for me.
I'll tell you, I love you guys over there. But we have, it's really such an easy thing, and I'm not unique. I'm not unique. There's so many great investigators out here that are doing it right and, you know, have their head down and just really working and focusing. One of the people I think of right away is David Weatherly, who I believe is one of the best investigators out here, period. He's got decades in the field. He listens sincerely probably one of the best interviewers as far as with a witness and getting stories. Who else could we trust with things like strange intruders and black-eyed children to make that kind of case? He's just brilliant, but he's doing some fantastic work right now. And, you know, we just, it's all about sticking together, Martin. It really is.
Yeah, right. So let's move back to you're leaving in just a couple of days for Bolivia and Peru. And what do you envision that you're going to be doing when you, as you say, get your boots on the ground there?
Really, I'm bringing everything from my FLIR to, you know, everything I own. I have a forensic kit that would make the sheriff's department jealous, which, you know, I had to have. It was something I've been really contributing to and adding to and, you know, just getting my hands on little bits at a time. Very important in case we have a chance to examine forensically an elongated skull or giant remains or necropolises. And, you know, so I'm just bringing everything I have to be prepared and be part of an expedition team that's literally on the hunt for the Nephilim.
Oh, wow. Now, how many people are involved in this investigation?
I believe there's 7 of us.
Wow. And
yeah, and I'm not the lead. I'm just a door kicker. And I love that. It's so nice to just kind of sit back and, you know, collect data and evidences and hopefully take some forensic samples and soil and everything I can do. Just be busy out there instead of coordinating everything from logistics to, you know, emergency contact list in case somebody gets hurt. I know who to call back home.
It sounds like almost like an archaeologist dig or something like that. Is it similar?
It would have to be in Peru, so we're ready for that. Mm. Absolutely. If you're looking for signs or evidence of Nephilim or the elongated skulls, the hybrid race that was here as in the days of Noah, that's been reported in, you know, not just Judeo-Christian literature or ancient text. It's almost all religions. And, you know, just that hybrid race that was here on the earth. And if they were here, then maybe there's still evidence. And maybe we need to go where they're most reported. And maybe, just maybe, if we're lucky, we can find, you know, this and actually get some DNA sampling and see what we can come up with. But if the Nephilim were here, I'd like to find it. Would that be awesome?
That would be something. Are you actually following in, like, something that was blazed before you, like other reports you said more or less in the area that you're going?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. This is a team that's been here, been there before. I hate to sound so secret squirrel because I hate secret squirrels. I hate that stuff. But I promise as soon as we're allowed, I will call you right away, Martin, and we'll talk about it. But, you know, it's seriously something that it's new, and this team has been on it for a while. It's, you know, for people who are familiar with the Nephilim and the cosmic type of information, they probably know exactly who I'm talking about. But I'm so fortunate to be invited to this, to participate in this, because it's huge. It's huge. And I'm thrilled because, oh my gosh, the Nephilim, you know, a hybrid race that we know, we know they were here. A hybrid race on Earth. Come on. This is great stuff. I'm thrilled.
Well, I picture like a 1920s Egypt archaeological dig. You're out there in tents. You have your whites on. It's sunny. It's hot. And you're digging with the dust all over you. I can picture the whole thing. I may be a little off.
Yeah, maybe just a little, because it's a, you know, it's not so hot down there. Peru this time of year, it's more their spring. It's about 70 degrees. So, but you know, I think of all these things I've seen on television and books for so long. The, you know, Pumapuku and the Nazca lines in Bolivia. We're going to be flying over those.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, it's, oh my gosh, and to see these and to stand in these places and see for myself these incredible buildings that would we'd have such a hard time today to put together.
Right. I know. You can't even put a thin piece of paper through the joinery. Some of those structures are just amazing. And how did they have the technology that many thousand years ago to grind stone to, connect like that?
Absolutely. And then when you take in properties of this and find out how much crystal and mica are in this, or, you know, the fact that you bring a psychrometer with you and, you know, and you see that there's absolutely no moisture in these rocks at all. It's literally just amazing. Or the FLIR shows that there's no air ducts. Like you said, they're jointed. And they're 5 and 6 foot thick. Mm. That's incredible to keep that kind of rock on rock.
Absolutely. And how could you even lift something like that? I mean, that goes all the way, you know, you think about the pyramids and all that. And just there are so many mysteries that we will maybe never know about. And there's, the forbidden archaeology out there, too. where, you know, things get discovered sometimes and are kind of like not ready to be out there for people.
Oh, and they disappear and get covered up. We had that investigation a while back in Du Bois, Pennsylvania, where they had all these, strange anomalies. We went up as a paranormal investigation. It's the one where Ken Storch saw a Bigfoot like being. He ran right into it, not believing it, which is funny as a UFO person. But this property that this house and this family live on was actually part of an archaeological dig where they have reported anywhere up to 162 skeletal remains removed from this property. Well, I'm thinking that's pretty important as an investigator, and we couldn't get anyone to tell us where those remains were. How do you lose 162 skeletal bodies when you know that? And they dated back Paleo era, by the way. We did get documentation on that much.
Wow.
But they disappear. And, you know, of course, the witnesses believe that they were larger than normal, which kind of scared them because they were young teenagers. They didn't expect them to be so odd looking, which scared the crap out of them, you know. So, but we couldn't find anyone that would give us information or even verify, even though the dig is documented. And the pottery they found was so unusual, they hadn't seen it before or actually since, that they call it the Kellgren pottery after the family. It's just an amazing case, but the things that we see disappear out of the Smithsonian and or things that you're not allowed to see sitting in local museums. You walk in and they'll tell you, I'm not allowed to show that to you. It's under lock and key because the Smithsonian won't let us exhibit it because they don't recognize it.
Mm.
Crazy.
It goes back to egos again and fear and all that, you know?
Yes.
There's a lot of fear rules a lot of these decisions that are made.
Sure does. Fear and control over what we're allowed to know. Again, the institutions control all the information, and it's on my nerves.
Well, we have about five or six minutes left, so there's one thing I want to touch on. I don't know if we'll have enough time to talk about it too much, but we keep kind of repeating the same similar theme here where there's, say, sometimes there's a Bigfoot sighting, then there's a UFO sighting, then there's a ghost sighting, all in the same place, right around the same time. What is up with that?
It's why I actually, from a ufologist, which I always, I am a ufologist, that's my love, but it's why I had to get into studying cryptids and unknown animals and creatures and monsters, and why I also got into the paranormal. Because, again, J. Allen Hynek, David Jacobs, Jacques Vallée, they all came down to, they believe this is dimensional. They believe that, you know, all of this is somehow connected. And whether that's they live in this dimension, three away from us, two away, you know, however that works, it didn't matter that they believed that this was something that happens. I do know that people that have had contact with alien beings, abductions, UFO phenomena often have paranormal type constant. They're just plagued with it after and this type of activity, often with Bigfoot or the latest reports we're getting a lot of giant dogs.
What?
And yeah,
that's
when I
like,
say giant,
Skinwalker Ranch.
Yes, when I say giant dogs, they're very muscular, big, black, hairy, the size of what they call kind of small horses, but not the little ones. But you know, a smaller frame horse, but still the size of a horse. Clearly, black hairy dogs. And then, of course, we do know that one of the prophecies that came out of the secrets of the Fatima that were given back at the biggest UFO sighting in Fatima way, way back in the day was that demons will come forth as strange animals. But it's all coming together, and we just can't ignore certain things. I don't want to look into demons. I don't want to look into a cosmic deception. How else could Satan or the fallen ones or this whole race of angels that have rebelled, how else are they going to trick the elite into following them and giving up on God and all this over here? They got to come up with something better than, hey, you know, kind of think we're the Antichrist. That's okay. You know what I mean? It's got to be something that just changes everything. And they've got to look like the good guys.
Wow.
So I don't want to do this. But I have to, because we have to follow the evidence. We have to. If we're going to find the truth behind everything that we desire, which is bottom line, we just want to know what's going on. And it's humanity. It's the biggest question in humanity. It affects everything, Martin. And we can't just look at this avenue because we don't like this one. And we don't want to deal with the paranormal. It doesn't belong in nuts and bolts ufology. Mm-hmm. Sorry, dude, but... How are you going to ignore that? You're going to miss part of the puzzle.
You know, I think you should just follow the road and just see where you end up. You know, I mean, with an open mind that you have, there's nothing wrong with that or nothing to, you know, make excuses for. I would just, you know, do what you're doing because you're so thorough and you're so accurate and careful at what you do. I say hats off to you, and I hope you find out something.
Me too. And, you know, I just love it so much. And, you know, part of it's a journey as well. And I know your audience knows this as well as you, Martin and Sam. You know, the journey is just as wonderful. The people that we get to talk to and meet, whether they're witnesses, other investigators, the theories, the, you know, just larger than life pictures or bubbles that we live in that we can imagine so much greater. It's worth it whether I get an answer or not. It's mm-hmm. really just, I love what I do.
I do too. You know, I had no idea. I'm kind of a newbie, you know, been around this. Well, I've been thinking about it for a long time, but been around this since the 2006, really looking into it more seriously. And I'll tell you what, it's been a wonderful ride. You know, there are some amazing people. And, you know, there are some whack jobs, of course, there are in anything you look into, but there's some people that are real serious. There's highly intelligent people that are taking this seriously, and I hope it does lead us to the road of something. And you're one of those people, Chase.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And why don't you just tell the audience where they can find you? You do a show and all that.
I do. I have a show. It's called Project White Paper, and if you'd like to know more about where you can find that or pretty much anything else. You guys, friend me on Facebook. I love my Facebook. I'm a little obsessed with it. If you could put up with my grandkid
that.
Pictures, yeah, and my goofy husband stories, yeah, please friend me on Facebook, or you can go to my website, which is chasekletzky.com, and that last name's tricky, so I'll spell it. It's KLOETZKE. And sign my guest book. Let me know you were there, because I love, love, love meeting everyone.
Well, this is great. Chase, you've been absolutely wonderful, as always. And I can't wait to talk to you when you get back from South America, when you can actually talk about what's going on.
For real. I can't wait to tell you guys either. And thanks so much for having me on, Martin. I've I always enjoy my time with you. You're a rock star.
Oh, awesome. Well, everyone, thanks so much. And if you missed any part of the show, you can catch it and over 80 free podcasts on our website, which is Podcast UFO. Also, you can check out our links to our stories and our show notes. And you can join our forum. We have a very, very active Facebook page with almost 7,000 people on there. And hope to see you on that. And for the Facebook page, by the way, you get all the updated news daily. We have someone working on that every single day. And thank you again, Chase. And we'll see you all next week at the same time right here on the Dark Matter Radio Network.
Thank you for listening to our show. And please remember to check out our website, podcastufo.com, for the latest blogs and forums. We will be back next week. Thanks again, and remember, keep your eyes to the sky.